NBC News brings you the 40th annual convention of the National Association of Broadcasters meeting in Chicago. The convention will be addressed by veteran news commentator Edward R. Murrow, now the director of the United States Information Agency, who has just been presented the 1962 Distinguished Service Award of the NAB. Speaking from the Grand Ballroom of the Conrad Hilton Hotel in Chicago, here is Mr. Murrow.
Mr. Chairman, sir, Mr. Mayor, Governor Collins, ladies and gentlemen, you have done me great honor, and beggar that I am even poor in thanks. It would require the eloquence of the ancients to make adequate response. However, I would begin by denying a particularly scurrilous rumor. The rumor being that I departed broadcasting because I feared lest my image be somehow blurred by a new program featuring a talking horse. backed by a stable of fine writers, a program titled Mr. Ed. I am fully aware that a much-talking bureaucrat is an ill-tuned instrument, and that brevity is good both when we are and are not understood. I was, for many years, one of you. I am perhaps rather in the position of my friend Louis Armstrong. When I telephoned him on one occasion several years ago, he was in London and asked him if he would go to Africa, to Ghana. And Louis replied in that wonderful voice that was so adequately described by an Australian journalist as sounding like a tired piece of sandpaper calling to its mate. And Louis said, Daddy, I don't know where that place is you're sending me to. And I explained to him that it was Ghana. And he said, what should I do when I get there? And I said, Louis, you don't have to say anything. Just blow that horn and act natural. And he said, no, I should ought to say something. And I said, well, if you feel like it, you might say you were glad to be on the coast of Africa because probably some of your ancestors were taken from there and sold on the slave market in New Orleans. And he said, all right, Daddy, I goes. 2 days later, faithful to the tradition of accurate reporting, AP, UP, and Reuters all reported that Louis Armstrong had arrived in Accra, had stepped off the plane to the cheers of 60,000 people, and said he was delighted to be there because probably some of his descendants came from Africa. So I am, I suppose, in a sense, a descendant of the NAB. I must confess at the outset that I had written a speech, and I read it on the plane coming out, and I had dealt at dreary and tedious length with the history of communications in this country, the Pony Express, the telegraph key, and I became suddenly conscious that I had fallen into the bureaucratic trap of belaboring the obvious at great length. So I have jettisoned a considerable portion of that turgid prose. I hope constantly to be conscious of the experience of a visiting bishop at Yale who took for his text the four letters Y-A-L-E, and he held forth for 7 minutes on Y for youth and impressed no one. But nothing daunted, he carried on for 6 minutes and 10 seconds on A for ambition, by which time there were obvious signs of unease in the audience. But being a determined man, he pressed forward for 4 minutes on L for loyalty, ended up his peroration on E for energy, by which time he had lost the audience completely. The choir filed down the center aisle, followed by the bishop, and in the rearmost pew, he found a student still on bended knee. And he said, Young man, perhaps you would be good enough to tell me what it was I said that moved you so deeply. And the student said, sir, I was offering thanks that I go to Yale, rather than to the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. So, having spared you several pages of manuscript, it seemed to me perhaps useful to talk a little of both the present and the future. In a matter of bare weeks now, there will fly from the launching pad at Cape Canaveral a missile carrying in its head a 34-inch near-spherical capsule that will give us television in the heavens. We shall beam a signal from the state of Maine up to the satellite in orbit. That signal will return to Earth in Europe, and a new era in communications between men will be underway. My agency is already deeply involved in this project. We have been charged by the Space Agency with the program responsibility for the content of that first broadcast. We have already met with the major networks to take the first steps in this exciting project. We are planning for its exploitation abroad by the combined use of all our media, television, motion pictures, radio, press, magazines and pamphlets, exhibits and books. We produce all of them, and in all of them, we shall chronicle this major step forward in the peaceful use of outer space. And the program content and the production will be carried out by a joint group of the three networks. For the first time, man will have conquered the barrier of distance in telecasting. An ocean, a mountain, a desert, 1,000 miles or more, these will be as nothing to the future of television. We shall switch live from Baghdad to Bombay as easily as we do today from Boston to Baltimore. It will mean television live from America to Africa, from Europe to the Far East, all simultaneous and instantaneous. But this new satellite will solve no old problems. I can think of no one single issue today that will be more manageable due to satellite television. On the contrary, I can think of many issues that will be that much more difficult with global television. A bus burning in Birmingham could be seen live throughout West Africa. A United Nations debate on the admission of Red China may be seen live throughout the Far East. A Geneva Conference on Disarmament and Nuclear Testing will go live to the country that has felt nuclear weapons, Japan. Fidel Castro could be seen as large as life from one end of Latin America to the other. And all of Southeast Asia could be drowned under a torrent of instant Khrushchev direct from Moscow. Gentlemen, global television will not herald the coming of the millennium. And the reason for it is a fact too little acknowledged by many of the gentlemen in the business of communicating. A communications system is totally neutral. It has no conscience, no principle, no morality. It has only a history. It will broadcast filth or inspiration with equal facility. It will speak the truth as loudly as it will speak a falsehood. It is, in sum, no more or no less than the men and women who use it. And it is here that I suggest the future should give us cause for pause. You gentlemen will share the burden of what this new communication system will have to say. Around this globe, there are many people who seek only to lift their lives from a crushing way of existence. There will be many with starving bellies, diseased children, and squalid hovels, who will turn with but marginal interest to your new television. And what will you have to say to them? Satellite television will not solve the classic problem of communications since the beginning of time. What are we to say, and how are we to say it? Global television will not bring more wisdom to our minds. It will only give wider dissemination to what our minds have to say. I suggest the problem of what we are to say is one to which the broadcast world
might turn its mind, and urgently. These issues have been much on my mind of late, as indeed they have been for the past quarter century. I have not yet reached the age where my own reminiscences fascinate me, but my thoughts go back to Europe and 1936, those years when radio was first beginning to flex its wavelengths. The principal content of international radio to this country then consisted of such tranquillities as the Vatican Choir, Scandinavian folk songs, and the song of a nightingale from a Surrey wood. The development of regular and multiple radio pickup for news broadcasting did not begin until 1938, at the time of the Anschluss in Austria. Sundry other colleagues and I were there for those early days of the then new creation called radio. Our world and this country have traveled a long road since those days. There was Czechoslovakia, Poland, the Low Countries, Dunkirk, the fall of France, the Battle of Britain, Pearl Harbor, Bataan, Corregidor, and then at last, the long road back. There is much that comes to a broadcaster's mind. The hopes we held, the lives we lost, the dreams we deserted, the opportunities we were offered. Some of the memories are still harsh, and there is naught to claim them but our conscience. But when those days were done, a new world came slowly to being. And for this land, a posture of life completely different from all that had gone before. We shouldered the burden of helping distant men reassemble the shattered pieces of their fragmented lives. We fed the hungry. We comforted the broken. And we helped to re-knit the political, social, and economic fabric of nations where it had been so badly torn. We gave aid under a Marshall Plan. For the first time in our history, we sought allies in peacetime under NATO. For the first time in our history, we sought reason and rule over chaos and cacophony under a United Nations. For a country that had been raised on itself with gaze directed inward, this was a wholly revolutionary new posture. We completely reversed the course of our ship of state, and we did it in the full light of free debate. In a democracy, one does not govern long unless one governs the way the governed wish to be governed. We were able to do what we did because the people believed it was right. In some curious, mysterious fashion, I doubt that any of us understand how it comes about. There was a consensus, the making up of a collective mind. They believed this because the issues were explained to them, and the risk of our not doing was pointed out. And it was here that the mass media fulfilled its obligation to democracy. America chose her radical new posture in the post-war world, deliberately and out of deliberation. And this was the indispensable contribution of the communications media in an era when our policies became painful and some of our dreams turned to dread. And so it is with the world around us. These times are indeed less than tranquil. A sea of printer's ink headlining crises around the world has washed over the flood tide of our placid recollections. In a world such as this, the issues of life and death may not ultimately be determined by what people in the broadcast world say or do. But a contribution can at least be made. We live in a world we didn't make, but we are responsible for our inheritance, even though as a nation we came into our full inheritance at a rather tender age. I am told that last year the export of television product from this country ran to $40 to $45 million. That portion of your product which goes abroad is, as it should be, a matter for your own judgment. No government agency should have authority to control or even influence your product for export. But I suggest you would do well to acknowledge that in the volatile world in which we live, celluloid or magnetic tape is a strategic commodity. Those who do export of it ought to show concern and consideration for its use. I have doubt that what is being said abroad about the people of this land is in accord with what the people of this land would have spoken in their name. There is an honorable tradition of examining our society. The tradition of social exposure, or muckraking, if you will, is still alive. In years gone by, I have even ventured some small portions of it myself. Its export to an audience abroad, without knowledge of its circumstances, results in its being seen in isolation, by and of itself alone. They may not understand that its function is to make the body politic itch. They cannot know that it is meant to criticize and improve, and to so prod the social conscience that the urge to change might in time corrode the misdeeds thus exposed. What I am then suggesting is that when you put your tapes and your kinnies in your salesman's bag, you should have regard for what goes into it, as well as for what you hope it brings back. Not everything done abroad is necessarily perpetrated in the national interest. Those who export for profit should, I think, on behalf of all of us, have as much regard for impact as they have for income. Yours is the option of the free, the power of the instruments you control to influence opinion and attitude abroad is, I suggest, greater than you realize. I repeat that no government agency should be empowered to control what you produce for export, and no government agency has the appetite so to do. Both the opportunity and the responsibility are yours. The United States Information Agency is very considerably in debt to the broadcasting industry of this country for program material made available without cost to us. We should like to stand further in your debt. We have no desire to compete for the placement of programs in areas where normal commercial transactions are possible. But we should like to be able to make available an increasing amount of your product, both old and new, to those countries where television is just beginning. We believe that such placement will further the national interest immediately and will, in the long run, contribute to the expansion of your markets. I realize that I have raised subjects not easily discussed and even less easily resolved. But I suggest they are matters disregarded only at our peril. In the fever of the deep dread that must at times beset us all, there is at least a cooling consolation that the only thing that has kept pace with the instruments of mass destruction have been the instruments of mass communications. We have pitched man out into orbit. He may someday take with him weapons of destruction such as short years ago not even fantasy would have imagined. But that orbiting satellite may carry as well the mechanism of meshing our minds more closely together. The more our respective peoples learn of each other, the less inclined they may be to become moved to states of high passion about each other in time of crisis. Perhaps that is all we can do. Perhaps that is not much. Perhaps in the end of the day, that will weigh but as a feather in the scales of history. But at least it is something. This, then, could be history's last best charge to you. We are destined to live by our deeds. More than any of us dare to suspect, your contribution to the final reckoning could be the decisive one. That you may feel it less than decisive is no excuse for making it less than your best. For history will accept only your performance. The time of that performance before the eyes and ears of near everyone on this minor planet is close at hand. Our communist bloc competition is able to operate in the field of political, psychological, and indeed entertainment warfare at an economic loss. We in this country operate our communication system on the basis of free enterprise. It must remain free, and I suggest it must be more enterprising. Thank you.
NBC News has brought you Mr. Edward R. Murrow, the director of the United States Information Agency, addressing the 40th Annual Convention of the National Association of Broadcasters in the Grand Ballroom of the Conrad Hilton Hotel in Chicago. Mr. Murrow spoke on the problems of global communications in the space age. This is Jim Hurlbut, NBC News, Chicago.
This is the NBC Radio Network.